Hello and welcome to your weekly dose of the latest sustainability fun news, facts and reviews brought to you by the Green Elephant. This week, police arrest dozens of Extinction Rebellion protesters in London. Is this the end of the fossil fuel era? Presidential candidate Biden vows to end fossil fuel. Composting biodegradable balloons. Here's what happened after 16 weeks. And the UK's first geothermal Lido opens. Joining me to discuss these and more as usual is Russell. Morning, Russell.
Good greetings, fair sir. I'm tired.
And how are you today? But you're tired.
Let's go for this. Let's go for this because there's some good stuff in here.
Great. Also coming up are our sustainability selection, Action Alley, and of course, Fact or Fake. We'll also be talking about Unilever again, wildfires, Lenovo, again. Wrangler, MasterCard, vegan tuna, dogs, renewables, and gorillas. So, first up this week, police have arrested dozens of Extinction Rebellion protesters in London. Thousands of protesters have descended on Parliament Square in London, leading to at least 90 arrests, as the group kicked off 10 days of civil disobedience to demand government action on the climate crisis. Four of the groups blocked roads as they marched across central London, waving brightly coloured flags and banners, demanding MPs back what they have described as the Climate and Ecological Emergency Bill. And I guess this is an interesting story in that I guess this is, you know, the first of many of such protests, which I can see coming in the future, whilst the world has been focused understandably on pandemics and Brexit and economy and things like that. We had a story a couple of weeks ago where, you know, there's a view that nothing has happened in the last 2 years on climate change issues. And I think, you know, you can understand why there were protests in the City of London with arrests and, you know, those people that were involved in that.
Yeah.
Looking at the situation now and thinking nothing's happened. So what do we do?
This is definitely a big grower, isn't it? I'm seeing a lot more of these banners. Although the symbol is reminiscent of something, but I can't quite put a finger on it. It's probably some film I've watched, or X-Files maybe. You see a lot of those banners popping up in windows and things now. So people are starting to get behind this. And eventually the politicians will have to understand that this is a potential future election winning thing that they need to address, but there are bigger things afoot, not least which is we're in the middle of a recession stroke depression, and but there is some stuff going on, but it's just not fast enough. That's the problem, isn't it?
What do you think about the whole Extinction Rebellion there? You mentioned their logo, their look and the ethos of that. How does that feel to you?
It feels passive aggressive, if you see what I mean. I don't know. I don't want to use the symbology is almost fascist in its style. Yeah. If you see what I mean, I'm trying not to upset anybody.
I think there's a huge groundswell of people that are concerned and interested in all these issues.
Yeah,
and I'm not sure, and maybe listeners could let us know what you think. I'm not sure that groundswell necessarily shares the very, you know, hardline aggressive stance that Extinction Rebellion are taking. So maybe it's a kind of a sharp point of a broader thing, and maybe that doesn't sit well with people. I don't know. It'd be interesting to see what people think.
I suppose the downside, wherever you have a large group of people, okay, being civilly disobedient, which is how they're getting attention, but generally peaceful, it will always attract the extremists of either an opposing view or the very extremists of the same view, prepared to go that little too far. Yeah. And, you know, I've never been to a rally like this. I've got to be honest. I've never got up and done a rally on any matter, mainly because London's a long, long way away, and doing a rally in Truro attracts around about 8 people. But because the rest of them are in the fields. But yeah, I understand why people are getting anxious. I do get it. And whatever you believe with regards to climate change, it is happening.
And I guess the question is, well, if not this, what else can you do?
What else can you do? Yeah.
And that is a challenge. But there was one thing about this story that really made me chuckle, is that there's obviously some witty people amongst the Extinction Rebellion cohort, because they've made a makeshift cardboard Boris the Bank Engine train, which I think that did make me laugh. I thought that was
right. From Buckingham Palace towards Parliament. I must admit, in HS2, which is just carving through wildlife, all sorts of natural wildlife and farmland and everything, okay, it's got a good economic and perhaps people centric, but it may not be great for the environment. But at this point in time, can we really afford HS2? But let's not get into that. It's not sustainability.
That's one for another day.
Sustainability selection.
And now it's time for a quick review of something we recommend that listeners go and have a look at. And this week, we've chosen the Sustainable Development Knowledge Portal. And you can find this at sdgs.un.org/goals. We'll obviously put that link in the show page. But we've talked on this podcast, and we had an interview with Guillaume Lafortune about the Sustainable Development Goals, and there's an assumption that everybody knows what these are. And so seeking to rectify that assumption, the single best resource to find information on what these goals are, what they mean, you can find at that link. So it's a great page, very easy to view, tells you what the 17 goals are. There's a great little hover over of each goal and gives you a bit more information about what each of the goals are. There's some history of where the goals came from, and loads of kind of guides and publications and events that kind of page links you off to. So if you're wondering what the SDGs are, then that is a great place to look, because I think, Russell, we're seeing more and more people kind of get behind the SDGs, and we mentioned a week or two ago companies that were using them as their corporate strategy.
Yeah, and it's the government recently recommended the local government start putting their strategies together on the basis of the SDGs. You may not be able to satisfy all of them as an organization. In fact, it's probably very unlikely you have a scope of operation that would cover all of these sustainable development goals. But you know, like we do believe in we can affect a decent work and economic growth and reduced inequalities in the way that we operate. So those are the ones we're getting behind amongst some of the others. So yeah, it's worth a look, definitely.
Yeah, absolutely. Right, so let's take a look at some other big sustainability news stories from the week. In company news, as ever, we have our smattering of commitments to be carbon neutral or zero emission by whatever date the company chooses. But let's start with Unilever, who plan to remove oil-based ingredients from all their cleaning products. So products such as Domestos, Persil, Cif, which used to be called Jif when I was younger. I know. And they're committing to a clean future initiative. So it's removing chemicals and renewables and recyclables and those kind of things. So I guess a good initiative.
I thought it was quite interesting. Sorry, cut across you.
No, carry on.
I hadn't really thought of, you know, you always think about the plastic, and there is a tremendous amount of plastic in these products. Everything is kind of disposable.
In the bottle,
yes. But I hadn't really considered it actually being that much in the oil, in the actual liquid.
Yeah.
So I mean, apart from that, they've got a couple of things in there, but yeah, getting rid of oils, and they are starting to do that already. And they got, I think that's quite a challenge. They are a massive company.
And again, what made me laugh, they're talking about oil-based cleaning products. And it says here that the company, which owns more than 400 brands, including Dove, Comfort and Sure, they're all cleaning products, and Marmite. Now, yeah, I'm not sure how much oil there is in my Marmite.
I'm hoping there's not
maybe,
a lot.
Maybe I'll avoid that. Right. Moving on, Lenovo has committed to reducing Scope 1 and Scope 2 emissions by 50% by 2030. This is, you know, another 2030 will reduce our emissions. 50% isn't that ambitious compared with many other organizations we've seen, but they are getting on the right
bandwagon
page and bandwagon with their supply chain. So it's good they're talking about that. But they're talking about emissions relating to operations, energy purchased for electricity, heat, steam and cooling. So they're not talking about all their emissions.
Well, no, I mean,
some of them, and 50%. I mean,
for those that don't know what Scope 1 and Scope 2 is, and there's a Scope 3 as well. The Scope 1 is where you directly make emissions. So you're burning something, you're producing something which has an emission of some kind, like your fleet vehicles. So that's Scope 1. Then you've got Scope 2, which is from the electricity you purchase. Is that green? Is it, you know, somebody else is generating it, but where are they getting it from? Or anything that's created by anything that's eventually used by the organization. Then you've got everything else outside it. And so they're not really counting anything outside their control, which could include I don't know, other people's business travel, procurement. So if they're buying from a company that says, oh, this is very environmentally friendly product, but the rest of the company is rubbish, it's driving around in it, or gives all of its employees poorly running old diesel cars, then they are, they're so no better off. It's a little.
So I think conclusion on that one is not a great headline, really, once you think about what it is they're actually doing.
Smells of greenwashy a little.
It does, smells a bit like that. So BrewDog, have you had BrewDog beer, Russell?
Well, as a person who doesn't drink much, possibly not.
No, well,
I know they're big.
We're not big drinkers, but I have actually been to a BrewDog pub in Newcastle, and it's a very nice beer. But BrewDog, they are seeking to become carbon neutral, and more than that, they're trying to remove twice as much carbon from the air than they emit every year.
Yeah.
They want to be the first carbon negative international beer brand in the world. So I think, unlike the last story, you know, the evidence of what BrewDog are doing, you know, their brewer in their UK bars are now wind power. Their spent grain from the brewing process turned into green gas to power the brewery. They use anaerobic digesters. They're making investments in electrifying their vehicle fleet. They've put local brewing sites in various countries to reduce the beer miles. So, you know, these are things that you can see this company is actually taking this stuff seriously. So,
And negative will, and until we come up when there are technologies to suck CO2 out of the air, but different story, but to become negative means they have to be doing offsetting, and they have bought over 2,000 acres in the Scottish Highlands. And
I like this because they're going to plant BrewDog Forest. So I look forward to going for a walk in BrewDog Forest.
Well, it's better than that. You can go to BrewDog Forest and live in a sustainable retreat and have a sustainable education. So they're really throwing themselves into this.
And drink sustainable beer, absolutely.
Yeah, I'm sure there'll be beer. It feels less greenwashy. They bought the land. They've made big investments. Really impressive.
Yeah. Moving on to Aldi, the budget supermarket retailer. They're going to power their Australian supermarkets 100%, And I like this one because it's the end of 2021, which is a year away. Yeah. So, you know, if you're going to make a commitment to do something, then get on and do
it. Pull
your
finger out. Yeah.
So I think, you know, that's great. There's no reason why other supermarkets, they says here, using the rooftop of its vast real estate portfolio to harness more than 15% of its energy from the sun. Now, there's no reason why any supermarket chain couldn't do this.
No.
Their rooftops are vast.
Yes.
Yeah, I think good on Aldi.
Yeah, I mean, they're
moving quickly.
I saw that they got 64th biggest user of electricity in Australia. So that's a major player in electricity in Australia. So, yeah, it's good news.
Mm-mm. So, Russell, do you know what Sensational Vuna is?
Oh, yes, I do, because I read this.
Oh, did you?
Okay.
New taste.
You introduce it and I'll...
for vegans and non-vegans alike. It's Nestle's new vegan tuna. It includes 6 ingredients: water, pea protein, wheat gluten, rapeseed oil, salt, and a natural flavor blend. An alternate... a tuna which has the same flaky texture of tuna and can be used in salads. So I think we're going to be seeing more of this, more kind of artificial, if not made from natural ingredients, but
yeah,
processed flavors and textures that give us something that is like fish or like meat or like something else, which is, you know, those things. Or meat is kind of, you know, not as friendly as these kind of plant-based products.
Yeah, obviously the vegan, if you'd like to be vegan then, or you feel ethically drawn to being vegan, then it's great. I just don't quite get why, having made the choice to go on a plant-based diet and commit to the vegan lifestyle, that you then seek out meaty alternatives, like, which is like, yes, it's like,
but I think there are people, and I think I'd probably be like this, you know, that, and you know, our carnivorous tendencies, you know, are quite strong, and so the you know, the taste and flavor of those fish-based, meat-based meals, if
you would, you know, miss,
yeah, I think if they're creating those in plant-based alternatives, then why not? I think it would make the lifestyle and the choice to go that direction much more easy and appealing to more people. So
yeah, well, I mean, Nestle has come under so much of a battering in the past, just some of its practices, so, you know, reducing fishing and overfishing and producing tasty, healthy, hopefully, products, then yeah, it's another option to perhaps draw people away from eating real tuna, maybe.
And welcome back. We had a few technical issues, as you may have heard, with Russell's connection. So, the wonders of technology and lockdown and remote working. Without further ado, let's skip on to Action Alley.
Action Alley.
So this week we are talking about using your hob more efficiently. Now, Russell, when you use your hob, are you efficient about it?
Well, yes, I am, Mike. I am the hob Nazi in my house.
Oh, are you?
if there is such a thing, I'll be the one that gets up whilst I'm watching somebody else cook and turn down the flames so they're not lapping up the side of the thing and the saucepan, and the lids roll unbelievable amount of heat you're basically releasing into the kitchen by not putting
lids on. Yeah,
on, and it's just ridiculous.
Yeah. So just as a couple of really simple things that listeners can do to make sure you use less energy when you're preparing your meals, use the lids on your pots and your pans when you're cooking. It's a really easy thing to do. And
being there, people, and one thing I've had with people is when you put the lid on, you have to turn the gas down because it boils more efficiently. Otherwise, it'll boil over. And I watch somebody with a pan on that, putting the lid on and then standing there waiting to lift the lid off so that the bubbles boil down, then put the lid back on again.
Oh,
Just turn it down. Until it stops doing that. Oh.
And if you are using gas, don't have the flames spewing everywhere around the sides of the pan. Just turn it down, because that is heating fresh air. And there's no point in that. So, so a couple of quick tips. Use your hob more efficiently. Right, on to the next story. So, is this the end of the fossil fuel era? Presidential candidate this week, Joe Biden, vows to end fossil fuel. I guarantee you we're going to end fossil fuel, Biden says. In 2016, 80% of the total world energy came from fossil fuels, 10% from biofuels, 5% nuclear, and 5% renewable. Only 18% of that total world energy was in the form of electricity, and most of the other 82% was used for heat and transportation. So there's a lot of energy coming from fossil fuels. But the 2020 presidential candidate, Joe Biden, has said that he plans to eliminate and end the use of these fossil fuels by 2050, just 30 years from now. However, many environmental activists, as ever, are not satisfied with the 30-year goal, saying his plan is not fast enough. So there's always going to be two sides to this argument and many other considerations. So 30 years, Russell, do we think 30 years is ambitious enough?
No, not from the world's largest, one of the world's largest economies. I don't know, they seem to be up and down at the moment. But it's rubbish. They've got a massive, massive capability to produce solar and wind power in their world. And what the big thing with Americans is they just got to stop burning it, because they drive around in the most ridiculously inefficient cars. Use less stuff. It worries me if this is the really good environmental approach. Then what the hell is absolutely Trump planning?
Well, I think the other thing is that, you know, it's all very well to make this statement, but the other question is, can he? Because we're going to end fossil fuel in the US, maybe. He's not going to end fossil fuel around the rest of the world. So it's a kind of a broader statement than he's capable of delivering. And I think you're right. Is ending fossil fuel in the US, that's going to take a major cultural mind shift for the entire US population.
Yeah, it's a fundamental change. And then until they generally have somebody in the driving seat that believes that they need to take action. If you don't believe climate change is man-made, contributing to climate change is not a good thing, but just polluting your atmosphere that you have to breathe in later or eat later isn't the good thing.
So I think, you know, we welcome the fact that these statements, kind of statements are being made. But it's weak, and I think many activists, as they say, they're saying that the plan is not fast enough, and I think we kind of agree with them.
Did you read the quote? There was a specific quote. It says, took the hand of a young woman or something, or called to a young woman and called her kiddo. And he said, I want to just take a look, okay? You don't have to agree, but I want you to look in my eyes. I guarantee you, we're going to end fossil fuel, and I am not going to. And I kind of went, and they applauded that, probably because he's not going to be around long enough to actually end it. At his age, he'll most likely be gone by the time 30 years is up. But maybe that's what he meant. I don't know.
Talking about not being around long enough,
and
onto the subject of balloons, we all love a good party. But a story this week from Eco Warrior Princess. So check out their blog if you're interested in there's a lot of lifestyle fashion type things. But this week, a story that caught our eye was they looked at biodegradable balloons. So balloons that have been marketed as biodegradable. And what they did was they put them in an industrial compost heap for 16 weeks. They unearthed the blue and white balloons and found them totally unscathed. The knots they'd spent painstakingly tying hat by hand more than 4 months before were still attached, and sparkly blue balloons still glinted in the sun. So they say the balloons came from packages that advertised them as 100% biodegradable, with the manufacturers assuring they were made of 100% natural latex rubber, with the implication clearly that the balloons would have no trouble breaking down in the environment. So that's really worrying. We put a post on our Instagram feed a few weeks ago about what does biodegradable mean and what does compostable mean and these different terms. But I mean, this is a really bad case of, you know, false advertising.
Greenwashing.
Really.
Yeah.
If you say something's 100% biodegradable,
well,
you would expect it to degrade.
I suppose, and playing devil's advocate here, everything is biodegradable. I am biodegradable. Glass is biodegradable. It just takes a million years to do so. The trouble with the word biodegradable, 100% biodegradable, is, well, of course it is. Everything rots. Everything will rot eventually. Our buildings will rot. But we're looking at speed. We're looking at not being in the environment in 10, 15, 20 years. And these very much likely will be. And
will
so
be.
I think then we need to be sharper on what does 100% biodegradable mean. Packaging needs to be clearer. This will degrade in so many months, weeks, years.
Well, I think there's a whole thing around packaging and labeling standards, and
this is
one example of something that's just, I mean, if I was to buy that from a shop, I would expect in the ground buried that to be gone after certainly a few weeks, and certainly after four months.
Yeah. The only thing I would say is balloons. Stop using them. They are completely unnecessary.
Oh, you party pooper.
Yeah, party, yeah, blah, blah, blah. If you don't want your balloons, and of course, if they're filled with gas and they get released, you're now fly tipping. You just don't know where you're fly tipping. You're just fly tipping both.
Yeah. Oh, dear. Right, moving on to a local story. Always like to feature local Cornish stories if we can. And the UK's first geothermo Lido has opened in Cornwall. The Jubilee Pool in Penzance uses underground heat to keep the seawater pool at 35 degrees. Lovely. Engineers behind the project said while the pool is the first Lido in the UK to be geothermally heated, the Romans beat us to it by 2,000 years in Bath.
Well, at least they're honest that there's nothing new in this. Yeah.
But I think this is brilliant. I mean, using the energy that is already under the ground, the heat that's already under the ground to heat the Lido in Cornwall. It's a lovely pool, actually. I don't know if you've been swimming there, Russell.
I've never swam in it, but I have actually been to it and had a look at it.
Well,
it's an impressive tool.
I've taken my boys there, and it is a huge pool, but it has seawater in it, and it is normally absolutely freezing.
So
you need your wetsuit normally. It's like really cold. So I mean, this is great news, and I think, you know, if more pools in UK around the world can be heated in this way, that would be
Well, to be honest, if we could get away from indoor pools, which take a tremendous amount of energy is to raise the temperature by 1 degree, and you know, an average Olympic swim pool is like 25,000 gallons of water. They never empty it. All they do, because it would cost too much to bring it back up to heat. If they empty it, it is a catastrophic cost event. Yeah, you know, you're taking hundreds of thousands of pounds to fill it with water. But yeah, I mean, to have one that's refreshed by seawater naturally and then heated naturally by geothermic temperatures, I think it's a great story wherever you are in the country. Come visit, people. That's
absolutely
my tourism.
Yeah.
Fact or fake?
And now it's your favorite time of the week, Russell. It's fact or fake. And yeah. I've made it a little bit easier for you because you had a 0-4 score last time. You didn't get any of them correct, so I thought
a trouncing. I think you might refer to.
I thought we'd give you a chance this week, and this week the fact or fake are all based around kind of green energy. So How is your kind of solar skills, Russell?
I can get brown by sitting out in the sun.
Okay. Brilliant. You should do well then. So first up, solar power is generated at night as well as during the day. Is that fact or is it fake?
No. Well, solar is light, but it would have to be light from the moon. I'd say fake.
I'm afraid that that is a fact. The solar panels do work at night as well in the day. They only need very low levels of a certain type of light to generate power. So they work all the time. And talking of how they work by something called a photoelectric effect. But the photoelectric effect used to make solar panels was discovered by Albert Einstein. Is that fact?
Really?
Or is it fake?
You know, I'm coming to loathe these sections, but well, Albert Einstein was incredibly time. Was incredibly. Oh, I'm going to do one in a minute. I can assure you. I would say fact.
That's correct. So the photoelectric effect was discovered by Albert Einstein. So that's absolutely correct, Russell. You're right.
Thank you.
Here's another one. A typical microwave uses more energy for the display than for cooking food. Is that fact or is it fake?
Well, there's a lot of parameters in there, Mike, for me to consider. I mean, how often do you use the microwave? Once a day, you know? So there is it is on all the time. I could say it could 800, no, fake.
So you're saying fake. You're saying a typical microwave uses more energy for the display than for cooking food. That is fake. No,
that's fake.
I'm afraid it's a fact.
Oh,
the
get
display,
on,
the
ridiculous.
Clock on it. The clock on it uses more energy than it does for cooking food. So that just shows you that leaving devices on standby uses a vast amount of energy.
Oh, we know a solution for that.
We do.
Coming soon.
We've got a solution for all the listeners coming soon. So watch this space for something really exciting to solve that particular problem. And finally, in fact or fake this week, the minimum size for a solar panel is about 1 inch square. Is that fact or fake?
The minimum size?
The minimum size, yeah.
No, I reckon a solar panel could be a lot smaller, so I'm going to say that's fake.
Yep, you're absolutely right. That is fake. Solar panels can be incredibly small and they use magnifiers above them to focus the energy down, so they can be incredibly small. So I think we'll call that a draw this week.
Okay. We had an article which we kind of skipped over early because we didn't, because we had that technical issue. But we were talking about Wrangler and their jeans. And so I thought I'd ask the question, how many liters of water are required to make a single pair of jeans? Now, I'll give you.
Now you say that, we had a post on Instagram this week about a T-shirt, and it was 2,000 liters or something crazy.
Yeah.
So yeah. Give me some options. You want to give me some options?
I'll give you some options. Is it 1,000, 5,000, 10,000, or 30,000?
But we have 10. We had 10,000 and 30,000, did we?
Yeah.
I'd say 10,000.
That's correct. Yes, but a horrific number for each single pair of jeans. 10,000 liters of water.
No, amazing.
So no wonder Wrangler are trying to work out how they can halve that.
Yeah, absolutely. Right, that's the end of facts or fake for this week. And finally, before we go, there's been a gorilla baby boom in Uganda. Now, I wasn't aware that gorillas had been in lockdown as well and spending a lot of time at home in the bedrooms. But apparently, 5 baby gorillas have been born in 6 weeks in Bwindi National Park, leading the Ugandan Wildlife Service to declare a baby boom. Announcing the latest birth, the UWS said, "The Rishgera gorilla family welcomes another bouncing, cute baby gorilla. 7 babies have been born since January, compared to 3 for the whole of 2019. And mountain gorillas are currently endangered, with just over 1,000 in existence. So that's a good news story."
Yeah, that's good. I mean, you know, it's a kind of a bad good news story when 5 constitutes a baby boom in a species. Yeah, so, yeah, we need a lot more of those booms. Perhaps they, yeah. Are we going to see a baby boom in around 8 months' time? That's going to be a bit horrific.
Well, we'll find out soon enough. You can find links to all the stories we've discussed on our show page at greenelephant.show. If you've got any stories or comments you want to share, then find us across social on @greenellipod. We're on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, and TuneIn. It'd be absolutely fantastic if you could subscribe and review the podcast. But until next time, thanks for listening, and we hope you have a sustainable week.